Raíces presenta su programa
Espejos de Aztlán.
Información,
arte,
cultura.
Bienvenidos.
Y bienvenidos a su programa Espejos de Aztlán. Welcome to your show, Espejos de Aztlán. This evening, we invite you to stroll with us inside a typical house belonging to a wealthy criollo or creole. We'll share this walk guided by Andrew Connors, art curator of the Albuquerque Museum of Art and History. Intrigue, opulence, loyalty, and at the same time, deep social and identity conflicts with the Spanish crown and Catholic religion are on display in a powerful exhibition behind closed doors in the Albuquerque Museum of Art and History. Enjoy this stroll with our host tonight, Andrew Connors, and me, Cristina Bachín. We are with Andrew Connors, the art curator of the Albuquerque Museum of Art and History. Thank you so much, Andrew, for giving us to Espejos de Aztlán your time to stroll with us and with our listener throughout this Behind Closed Doors exhibition.
Christina, it's great to be with you. This exhibition is so intriguing in so many different ways and tells so many stories about the richness and the contested history of Latin America. It's great to share it with our visitors.
So let's begin with this art in the Spanish American home 1492 through 1898 exhibition. Let's begin with the entrance of it and in the way you were calling Salón del Dosel. Why are we beginning with this salon?
Well, we're beginning with the room that the powerful, the wealthy, the elite throughout Latin America, including here in Santa Fe, because this same sequence of rooms can be found in the Palace of the Governors here in New Mexico, the capital of the Northern Territories. And so in the Salón del Dosel, we have a space that basically allows the owners of the homes to impress their visitors, to impress their guests, and say, this is our lineage, this is our connection. Now, in most of the homes throughout Latin America, they also would have a dosel or a baldaquino or a canopy, and under that canopy would be a throne or a grand chair for the king of Spain. And the idea was, we are so powerful, we are so elite, that we have a chair set aside for when the king happens to visit us. Well, none of the Spanish kings ever visited the Americas until the 20th century. So this never really happened. But the powerful depictions of the elite in the portraits that are included in this exhibition, all from the Brooklyn Museum collections, really tell so many distinct stories about the power struggles of the Creoles, the people of Spanish heritage born in the Americas, and how they tried to prove their legitimacy to the Spaniards who were born in the peninsula, the peninsulares. And so there's this constant conflict. And then the unwritten script underneath all of that is the indigenous heritage and Native Americans saying, we exist here, we pre-existed the arrival of the Europeans, and we demand some respect and some ownership of property rights as well.
Which one of the pieces we can highlight just for this show from the Salón del Dosel?
Well, I think there are two different groups of portraits. One is the incredibly important sequence of 14 Inca kings, the portraits of the lineage of Inca royalty. And another is a group of portraits from a prominent family in Mexico City, the Gómez y Cervantes de Altamirano y Velasco family from Mexico City. And we have six portraits from that family here in this exhibition that show the lineage and how family requirements and needs to serve their public changed through time from the 1750s to the 1820s. And it's an intriguing sequence of portraits.
Let's invite our listeners to come and try to see what's the mystery around this intrigue.
the next area you would like to highlight for our listeners now?
Well, I think
we stroll around with them, and since we are having this beautiful and amazing setting with bright colors.
Yes.
I love the way you organize it.
Well, the colors are all based on colors of Quito, Ecuador, in the historic buildings of Quito, Ecuador. And we had a conservator, a buildings conservator, consult with us to give us paint chips that matched the original 17th and 18th century paint colors of some of the grand homes in Quito, Ecuador. She was doing a survey for UNESCO in Quito, Ecuador, and she advised us on some of the colors and the historic accuracy of these colors.
And which hall are we right now? This kind of greenish, gray-greenish color.
Right. Well, we're transforming from the Salon del Dosel, the baldacchino, the reception room, into the sala, into the sort of living space, the major
living space. I would like to have one of this dimension and with this furniture.
Yes. Well, the furniture is very grand, and one of the things that the curator, Rich Asti, wanted to do with this exhibition was to show the contrast between the Spanish colonies and the British colonies in the Americas. So often in the United States, we privilege the British colonies, and we forget that the Spanish colonies had much more abundant wealth and much more grand living experiences, better music, better furniture, better access to major artists than they did in the British colonies, which subsequently became part of the United States. So in the Spanish colonial world, we see the wealth provided by natural resources, by slavery, by the exploitation of native peoples. All horrific stories as to what went on here in the Americas, but stories that need to be told, and stories that are told through these exceptional objects in very subtle and very meaningful ways.
Like, for example, let's highlight one or two of this area.
Well, in this major textile, it is woven out of cotton and alpaca fiber. So the alpaca fiber, which is indigenous to the Altiplano, to the highlands of the Andes, has been spun into incredibly fine wool. It feels like silk to the hand, although we're not supposed to touch it in the museum. And this textile would represent a luxury good for the ancient Inca as well. So the textiles were not just Spanish luxury goods, they were indigenous luxury goods. And here in the series of borders, radiating borders around the textile, we see indigenous Native American patterns on the outside borders, as you would see in Tiwanaku and some of the major sites in Bolivia. And then you see the next border in is much more of a European interlacing pattern, the way that you would see in many Baroque decorations and Renaissance decorations in Europe. And then we get to the middle border, and again we get back to the Native American, the Tiwanaku style patterning with the dots and the architectural forms. So we've got this constant play back and forth between indigenous and European style. And then the middle rectangular section is filled with this garden of delights of animals and plants, most of which can be specifically identified to indigenous plants and animals from the Americas. And then right in the middle of the rectangle, we have a depiction, a wonderful depiction, the only sort of realistic depiction in the whole textile, of this white dog with black spots. And the dog, a white dog with black spots, holding a burning torch in his mouth, represents the Dominican Order. So it represents the Christianity. So perhaps this was created by some leader of the Dominican Church in the Americas, specifically in the Altiplano. So there's so many different indigenous native objects mixed with European objects that makes this absolutely American. And one of the things, American meaning the Americas, mm-hmm. not United States. Mm-hmm. And so this exhibition tells that story of this mixing, the mezcla, the mestizaje of culture that makes humanity so very interesting. And the Americas were right in the middle of the world at the time, in the 1600s and 1700s, as Spain traded directly with Asia. So all of the Asian trade goods through the Manila galleon trade would have come into the port in Lima, Peru, or they would have come into the port of Acapulco in Mexico and crossed over land and then continued their voyage to Europe. And European goods would have come to the Americas and then on to Asia in the opposite direction. So we rarely think about the Americas being the center of the world, but they really were the center of the trade world. And with all the riches of the Americas, objects of exceptional complexity and richness are included in this exhibition, and you can see that in these objects.
I think there are also some love stories that were very difficult at that time. let's also highlight something around that.
All right. Well, in the we've moved from one side of the sala to the other side. And the sala would generally be a large room that was divided by a folding screen. And so now we've moved to the other side of the folding screen, to the women's side of the sala, or what would be called the estrado. And the estrado is basically the women's sitting area. And it's called an estrado because generally there would have been a platform, a little raised area, so that the women in these outrageously large dresses could sit on cushions on this raised platform. They wouldn't have to sit in chairs with these big hoop skirts that wouldn't have fit in chairs. So that was very much a North African tradition, a Moorish tradition, as they would have called it in Spain, a tradition of the North Africans that came to Spain and became a way of society showing their authority and their eliteness by acting more like North Africans. How fascinating.
Amazing.
Is that? And then that was brought to the Americas.
Probably
as well.
They weren't aware that they were acting like North African, or they could deny it. Yeah,
exactly. But there's that wonderful subversiveness of culture getting into mm-hmm. a mainstream culture and becoming the mainstream culture, even if the elite didn't know quite where it came from. And so in the estrado, we have this grand portrait of Mariana El Belsunce. And Mariana, Doña Mariana, sorry, she had her mm-hmm. title. And Doña Mariana would have was very much a woman of power. And when she was a young woman, she was engaged to be married to a much older man. And
also, it would say that he was very ugly, isn't
he
it?
He was, yes. He was described as uglier than an excommunication.
Oh, my God. Poor Mariana. Let's hear a little bit of this story. Let us know.
Well, Doña Mariana decided that this was something that she was not looking forward to, being married to a man who is uglier than an excommunication. And she was lucky enough that she received the word of God. And God called to her and asked her to join the convent. And so Doña Mariana joined the convent, thus avoiding the marriage to this older gentleman. And after a couple of years, he passed away. And God no longer called Doña Mariana, and he said, "You've done your work for me." And so she left the convent and married the older gentleman.
Let's move now to somewhere else.
We move through the grand home. One of the last rooms in the exhibition that recreates that home setting is actually the chapel, the oratorio.
And we're going through the bedroom as well.
Yes,
before.
Exactly. We're going through the grand state bedroom and through the asistencia, which is the sort of sitting room, the writing room, and passing by some incredibly interesting religious objects. And in so many of these religious objects that we come to take for granted because we've seen them reproduced everywhere, in this case we have great examples. And every one of the religious works from the Cusco school, from Bolivia, from Ecuador, all of those areas included a huge number of religious paintings in their homes. But every one of those religious paintings says it is American and it is indigenous made. It is not Spanish in a variety of different ways. For instance, in this grand portrait of Joseph and the Christ Child, we've seen lots of images of Joseph and the Christ Child, but here they are completely covered with these elaborate gold decorations, completely covering their clothing in a way that doesn't follow the folds of the fabric. So having gold on the image of Joseph and the Christ child makes a direct reference to the indigenous, to the Inca belief that gold symbolized man and the sun and silver symbolized female and the moon. So they are absolutely made direct connections to the sun and to the male power form. And then in the Christ child, you'll see that he's wearing sandals. Those are not European or Middle Eastern sandals. They are absolutely indigenous Altiplano sandals, the way that indigenous people, wealthy individuals of indigenous background would have worn these elaborate red-dyed sandals. And Christ is wearing the sandals of the local people, making a direct connection between the indigenous painter who made this work and the indigenous population that a work like this would have hopefully would have helped convert to Christianity.
And also Joseph here is not blonde.
No, we have no blonde, blue-eyed Josephs and Christs in this exhibition, which is kind of wonderful to see. Well, actually, the Christ child here has a little bit of a blondish hair, mm-hmm. but he would have grown up to look a little bit more indigenous. And then in many of the female religious images, we also see the Virgin Mary with her hair let down. And you see that occasionally in European art, but specifically in the Altiplano portraits, the Peruvian, Bolivian-style portraits, the hair of the Virgin Mary is usually crimped, and so it looks like it has waves all the way down as it flows over her shoulders. And that is a specific reference, according to some scholars, in the way that indigenous women would have kept their hair braided during the day, and when they come home at night, they would let their hair out of the braids, and it would flow down over their shoulders. So another opportunity for indigenous artists to say, this Virgin Mary is like our mother. There's a direct connection there. And then there's also a connection in the form of her dress, often to Pachamama, to the earth mother, the earth goddess that was so revered in so many of the South American.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to Espejos de Aztlán, and this evening we are walking inside a Spanish-American home inside the Albuquerque Museum of Art and History. Throughout its halls and throughout the exhibition, Behind Closed Doors, 1492 through 1898. And our host today for this walk is art curator Andrew Connors. My name is Cristina Bachin. I hope you're enjoying this stroll around the Museum of Art and History.
We're still in the chapel space of the exhibition. And there is one work that was commissioned by a person of Spanish heritage. And they wanted to commission a portrait of the Holy Family. So the Holy Family, according to Christian belief, is the Virgin Mary and Joseph and Christ child. So this Holy Family happens to be set in a carpenter shop. And there is Joseph with a two-handed saw on one side carving a large board while Christ is standing up on the woodworking table holding the other end of the saw.
He's working.
Working with his father, exactly, as a good child should. Certainly a good child in Latin America should be helping the family out with their tasks. And then the Virgin Mary is doing her needlework, and she's seated on a platform symbolic of the estrado, again, of the women's sitting area, while an angel is holding her embroidery yarn. And the entire cabinet shop is full of angels helping Joseph do his woodworking. And then above is God the Father and the Holy Spirit, while God the Son is down below sawing with his father. So it's a great depiction of indigenous life in the Americas, life of a regular family in the Americas, and combining with the Christian Holy Family story, basically conflating these two very disparate cultures and making them all seem unified and the same, one and the same. this exhibition has a number of objects that are truly astounding in their power and in their importance for Native American studies. And there are a couple of documents from the mid-1500s that basically allow Native peoples or provide an opportunity for Native peoples to express their kinship and their connections within the community. These are documents that scholars feel basically were created to show the Spaniards that there was nobility and there was royalty in indigenous populations as well. So it wasn't just the Spaniards that had their coats of arms and all of their grandeur, but indigenous people had that same sense of social hierarchy. And so in an object like this, lienzo, basically a drawing and painting on cotton fabric, we see the lineage histories and the trade histories between hundreds of different individuals in the Valley of Oaxaca in Mexico. And you see leaders of different family groups and different communities with both their indigenous names, such as Tonalá, and then the Spanish interpretation of that name also written. Sometimes it's in Spanish and sometimes it's in a transliteration of indigenous language. And so Tepeneme is one of the communities, Tonalá, Azatlanta, Metepec, these are different communities around Oaxaca, many of which still exist to this day. And then we have these glyphs of the particular families, the husband and wife relationships with their names, with their ages. And then we have these wonderful, typical of Mesoamerican, in particular Mexican, images and storytelling documents that we have these footprints. The footprints that are painted into the image showing lineage patterns and trade connections between these different communities. So the footprints literally connect the human beings from one community to another. And this is a monumental painting. It's an incredibly important object that basically says indigenous people are people too. And this is our heritage. This is the way for us to see our social structure and lay out our social structure. Another incredibly important lineage document from Native heritage is Juan Tepatzin's genealogy. And Juan Tepatzin was an individual from near Mexico City. And he, you can see, here is his lineage down through the families, and the elder in his family is sitting under basically a palace roof, and that indicates that he is a noble, that he is an important person within the community, and then it progresses, the genealogy progresses through the generations down through this wonderful sheet of paper. And then there is Juan Tepatzin down at the bottom, and his symbol, his glyph, is basically a hill, a symbol for a hill. And I can't remember exactly what the Nahuatl name for hill is, but it's similar to Tepatzin. So there was that connection between himself and his family name. And so there are these incredibly important documents that basically counter all of the desire for noble connection and royal privilege in the Spanish colonial world with individuals that say, we have our own privileging system here in the Americas long before the Spaniards arrived.
Thank you, Andrew, for all this explanation about Behind the Doors, this amazing exhibition that is in the Albuquerque Museum Art and History. Do you want to add anything else about to ignite the curiosity of our listeners?
Well, I'm particularly intrigued with that suite of portraits that opens up the exhibition. And there were two different families that married, a woman from the Gomez de Cervantes family and a gentleman from the Altamirano de Velasco family. And those, when those two families merged, they then had children, and one of the sons is depicted in a portrait and a grandson is depicted in a portrait here. The grandson was 17 when his portrait was painted in 1802. And what's fascinating is that all of those portraits are about making connections to the king, showing their loyalty to the Spanish king. And yet, 19 years after the portrait was painted of the younger man, whose name was Don José María Gómez de Cervantes y Altamirano de Velasco, 19 years after his portrait was painted, he was one of the signers of the Mexican Declaration of Independence, basically saying, I reject everything that my family has stood for in terms of making connection with Spain. We Mexicans need to be independent. We need to establish our own independent nation. How wonderful is that, that after all of those generations, one of the family members stood up and said, enough is enough. We need to be self-governing as a nation of Mexico. And that story being told through such powerful images really just tears my heart apart every time I think about that young man saying, yes, that's my background, but that's not who I am as a human being. And this exhibition tells so many of those great stories of humanity in Latin America. Ahora sí. Llena del alma, ya no lo.
You were listening Espejos de Aztlán in a visit to the Albuquerque Museum of Art and History, guided by art curator Andrew Connors through the exhibition Behind Closed Doors. This Brooklyn Museum exhibition is opened in the Albuquerque Museum of Art and History, located in 2000 Mountain Road Northwest in Albuquerque, Tuesday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. until May the 18th. There will be several activities related with it, like on Wednesday, April the 12th, 11 a.m., a gallery talk by Andrew Connors, Sunday, April the 13th, 1 p.m., a conference by Dr. Ray Hernandez Duran about fashioning elite identity, and much more. And you can go online for more information on cabq.gov/museum or to the telephone number 505-243-7255. I want to highlight as well that the Latin American Baroque music featured during this show was compiled and selected by Andrew Connors. My name is Cristina Bachin. I invite you to stay tuned, because just right now you'll have Raíces show hosted by Luis Head. Thank you so much.